Welcome to The Gut Goddess Show, a weekly podcast to help you create one happier, flatter, and more joyful belly and life. I'm your host, Kezia Hall, a nutrition and functional medicine geek. And secret fact about me, I'm a total sci-fi nerd. I grew up watching Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Star Wars, and another show that I can't remember what it's called. Full on Trekkie over here. Hello, beautiful one. This week, in this episode, we're talking about a bunch of awesome things. I'm getting a little bit juicy in what we're talking about, and it's pretty jam-packed. We're talking dieting culture and mentality and how the heck you move away from it and why it's so toxic. We're looking at Hashimoto's, which is the thyroid condition, and also adrenal fatigue. And this conversation is between me and fellow nutritional therapist, Lauren. And I find out a bit about her journey. I ask her a bunch of nosy questions like I do everyone. And we just talk about some really, really interesting stuff. So make sure you give this a listen. It's going to be awesome. Otherwise, I hope you are doing well. Lovely. I hope things are going well for you. I am officially, as I'm recording this, I am about to head for my 20-week scan this week. So hopefully, by the time this goes live to you, I'll know if I'm having a boy or a girl, which is exciting. Hopefully, if baby is obliging in the scan and in taking pictures, I'm starting to feel a lot better, which is good. Get a little bit of less nausea and a little bit more energy back, not loads, but a little bit, which is really, really nice. And starting to actually get my head into gear that I'm having a baby. But more on that probably in future episodes. And to let you know a couple of things before we get started, if you are feeling stuck and overwhelmed and that you feel like every time you Google your bloating or your IBS or your fertility issues, you get completely confusing and conflicting advice, then make sure you book your clarity call with me. If you head to supernaturallyhealthy.org/clarity, we can book in a real life conversation, which is so fun, where I will go through and help you figure out what is going on with your body and health and relationship with food and bring some clarity to the whole kind of potentially confusing scenario that is our health. So if you're looking to become unstuck and get clarity and a clear plan of action around your health and you're ready to really see change, then make sure you book your clarity session at supernaturallyhealthy.org/clarity. Otherwise, we are going to get on with the show and with this amazing conversation with Lauren. And so just to let you know a little bit about Lauren, she can be found at The Fairy Food Mother. She's a qualified nutritional therapist and she helps women to feel empowered around food, to quit dieting so that they can feel happy and healthy without counting calories. Amen to that. She runs an amazing membership called the Secret Kitchen Club, and she really focuses on empowering women just to feel in control of their food choices, to ditch dieting and feel amazing around food. So I know that you're going to love this conversation. So let's dive on in. So welcome to the Gut Goddess Show, Lauren. It's exciting to have you.
Kezia. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited that you asked.
And tell for all of us listening, whereabouts in the world are you?
I am in Hertfordshire, which is a county just outside London in England, in the UK.
Very nice. Have you always lived there? Or did you move there or whereabouts?
No. I grew up in London, born and bred Londoner. And then a few years ago, we decided to head out of the big smoke and get a bit more country air and a bit more space for our little kids. Yeah, so we moved out. We're in a little village just outside St Albans.
Oh, very nice. I know, yeah. I do love London, but I do love space also.
Yes.
Which is slightly contradictory to living in London.
Well, it's nice because we're close enough to be able to go in and get the buzz if we need to. I was only there at the weekend, just out for the evening, but then you just get the train home and then you've got your lovely green space, you know, on your doorstep. So
yeah, I love that. That is super nice. And before we dive in and find out all about you and your journey and all the good stuff that you do, tell us, what food at the moment are you particularly loving?
I'm really enjoying raspberries at the moment. Yeah, nice. The sun has come out and we've sort of changed seasons a bit. I'm enjoying a raspberry, I have to say, a fresh raspberry. Yeah.
I've not eaten raspberries for ages, but now you say that. Mm. I do like a good old raspberry.
Like sort of, you know, the berries are coming back into season.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I always mean to go berry picking in the summer because I just think it looks like such a nice, you know, wholesome activity.
It is fun. Blackberry picking is fun.
I always forget. I get to like October and think, oh, crap, I've missed all the blackberries,
all the berries.
I've got nothing. I'll just have to buy some frozen ones or something. Because I used to be much better at doing it, like picking elderberries as well, elderberries and then blackberries and, you know, go off and foraging. I think this was in days when I literally had like my food budget was super minimal. So I would just go and like try and get free food. As much free food as possible. But that's the extent of my foraging abilities. I don't go any further than elderberries and blackberries, to be honest.
I don't go much further than a blackberry, to be honest. Yeah, I'd be too scared of anything else. No. But we do pick blackberries. There's loads around where we live, so yeah, that's good fun. The kids, yeah, they love it.
Nice. And so obviously we know you're a nutritional therapist and you run an awesome business, but tell us a little bit about your journey and process. How did you get to where you are now in terms of running a business all around nutrition and health and helping women? How did you get to that process and what was it you were doing before?
How did it all happen? So it was quite a few years ago now. I kind of left uni, went straight into a corporate job in central London in media and advertising, as you do. I had no idea what I really wanted to do when I grew up, but I managed to get myself a job. And I did that for a fair few years, climbed the corporate ladder, but I was really quite sick. I had terrible IBS, and you will relate to this, Kezia, as will your probably a lot of your listeners and your audience. I had plagued with absolutely terrible IBS, crippling, and I just didn't really join the dots as far as my lifestyle and my my illness was concerned. I went to see various doctors and they just diagnosed IBS, and I never really got anywhere. And then eventually I went to see a nutritionist and suddenly the lights went on and I started to connect, you know, my lifestyle, my fairly party hard lifestyle. And it was also quite stressful because I was working really hard and going out a lot. I was just not looking after my body. I was not caring for my body at all. And eventually I realized that what I was doing to my body was making me sick. And so I just became totally fascinated with nutrition, started to buy all the books. I did start a nutritional therapy diploma at that time, but I was still working full-time and studying part-time and it was just not really sustainable. So it took me a few years to finally qualify. I went to live in Australia for a couple of years and I studied out there for a bit as well. But eventually I did qualify and got my nutritional therapy diploma. And in between that, had my children, moved out of London, moved to Hertfordshire. So there was lots and lots going on. And I got my health into quite a good place. I was doing all the right things, eating all the right foods, and then I became a mother and that kind of all went downhill a little bit. Sorry to tell you.
It's okay. I need all the real information.
but I was actually fairly newly qualified. So I guess all of these things hadn't really become second nature to me yet. It wasn't a huge part of my life, this kind of being healthy. It was still, I guess, a bit new. And it didn't take much for me to totally fall off the wagon and let, you know, being a new mum totally sort of overtake everything. And I was just exhausted and eating all the wrong things and doing all the wrong things. But it was my knowledge of nutrition that then brought me back again. And it was having that knowledge and having that baseline and knowing that I should be doing better that I managed to kind of, you know, crawl out of the new mum hole and, get myself back into a good place. So for me, it's sort of just been a lifeline in various key stages in my life that has just brought me back to health and back to life and given me my vitality back. I think it's the just the ultimate foundation of what you need to be doing is just eating well and caring for yourself. And so many people don't. And what sort of led me to set up my business when it was in its infancy was to help other new mums get themselves back on their feet after having babies, because my sort of insight was, well, if I completely, you know, fall off the rails, and I know all this stuff about nutrition, then how are other women coping who don't have my knowledge? And so that's how I sort of started this, but it's grown and evolved. And I don't really specifically only work with new mums. I work with women, all sorts of women, and mums as well now. So it's just grown and evolved over the years as I have, I guess.
That's amazing. I love that journey. And I think probably lots of people can relate to the whole becoming a mum or another big, I don't know, lifestyle shift transition period.
Yes.
But a lot of the time it is becoming a mum, and their health kind of can really decline after that point. And I've had lots of clients that have ended up working with me and they've just been told for often years, oh, it's just because you're a young mum, if that makes sense.
Yes.
That's why you're tired. That's why you feel crap. That's why you're depressed. That's why you're suddenly got psoriasis or, you know, whatever the thing is. And then you're like, oh, I don't, I mean, that is a big factor. You know, you're sleep deprived. There's lots of things going on in your body. But it is a huge, I think, pivotal point for a lot of women in their health. Or as you say, similar to you, they were maybe relatively healthy before then, and then they just can't even think of how, like, incorporating healthy eating into this new huge lifestyle shift, having a new baby. And often I've worked with, or even just chatted to a few women or friends where they're, you know, their kids are eating organic, super healthy, real food, low sugar, whatever, weaning processes. And they're like, and then I'm going into the cupboard eating my Cadbury's chocolate.
And living off coffee.
I don't want them to see I'm eating it because I don't want them to eat it, but I'm eating it.
Yes, I see that a lot as well. I see that a lot. And also what you were saying about being sort of just fobbed off, really, and being told, oh, well, you're a new mom, it's normal for you to be tired. And I had exactly the same experience. I remember going to see my GP, and I think my son was maybe 6 or 8 months, and he was sleeping reasonably fine by that point. I wasn't breastfeeding anymore, and I certainly wasn't up through the night, but I was still absolutely exhausted. And it was just, oh, well, you're a new mom, you know, that's all they've got. And I did have some blood tests, and I was told everything was normal, and at that time I didn't know to look at them in more detail. But I did dig them out again later on, and I realized at that point that I did have borderline underactive thyroid at that point that was never picked up because I was so borderline. I was still within the normal reference range, but that was why I felt so terrible. And it was only because I knew what to look out for that I realized, gosh, I need to look at my thyroid now, which a lot of it just gets overlooked. Or they'll be put on antidepressants when actually they've got an underactive thyroid, or, you know, the low iron, or, you know, so many things it could be. But, you know, you don't always get the, you know, the right kind of route, I guess.
Yeah, and it's true. I think what you say, so many women, it's the thyroid is a huge issue in terms of people. I've got a client at the moment, actually, and she's older, kind of post-menopausal age, you would say. And we're pretty sure it is a thyroid issue going on for her, but it's just getting that diagnosis or getting those tests done is really difficult to the point. And she doesn't, you know, private testing isn't necessarily an option. And I'm like, oh, you've probably felt like this for years and years and years, and you just need a test, like just thorough thyroid test, thyroid panel, to help see whether it's you know, if it's an autoimmune thyroid issue going on, or you just underactive. And I've seen that with women across all ages, and myself as well, of being like, no, everything's fine. You're maybe just a bit depressed. Do you want an antidepressant? And I'm like, I'm not actually depressed. I'm just so for me, I noticed my thyroid being off. It's just my joints were really sore.
Yes.
So I was just really sore, achy joints. You know, I mean, I'm 30 now, but this is like my late 20s. I'm quite active. I like going up hills, whatever. But I was a bit like, so they thought I had rheumatoid arthritis. That's what they did a lot of tests around.
Yeah.
So it looks a lot like arthritis. And I'm like, pretty sure I don't have arthritis.
Yes.
But this is also not normal that I can't open a door. Like I can't grip to open a door properly or like open jars, you know, those typical wrist pains and knee issues. And so I, in the end, did end up just going privately around having my thyroid looked at because I was a bit like, I'm not crazy. Like I'm not depressed. Like I've been depressed before and I knew I wasn't depressed. I was just like, I would just like to open a door.
Yeah, quite simple. Not much, not asking for much.
No, I was like, in the morning, I just want to open the door and open that, you know, jar of jam or peanut butter.
Yes.
I was like, that's all I'm asking for here. And I'm 20, you know, and I'm not in my 70s or 80s,
where
it might be a bit more commonplace. I was like, that's all. I'm not asking for much. And so how did you end up did you get your thyroid looked at more thoroughly or did you go private with that? How did that unfold?
Yeah, I did get my thyroid looked at more thoroughly. It was after my daughter was born. So that was my second child. And also after we'd moved out of London. So, you know, a lot had happened, you know, I had a baby and a toddler, and we'd just, you know, moved out of my hometown, into a completely new area. So there was a lot going on. And I just, you know, I've shared this story previously. I'd got to the point where I was waking up in the morning and bursting into tears and regularly. I thought, this doesn't feel right. You know, I'd quite like to be able to, like you say, you'd like to be able to open a door. I'd like to be able to wake up in the morning and not burst into tears is the first thing I do when I realize I've woken up. So that was quite a low point. And I honestly can't remember because I have no memory because of my thyroid problem. But I think I did manage to get the GP to test my antibodies, but I was seeing a naturopath at the time. So it was a combination of GP and, you know, private in that I was paying, you know, for a private naturopath nutritional therapist at that point, who had experience with that particular area. I didn't have a lot of experience actually with thyroid or autoimmunity at that point. But once I realized that I did have high thyroid antibodies, despite the fact that my thyroid function test was quote unquote normal, although it was very borderline, as far as the GP was concerned, it was normal. So for them, there was no action needed, but my antibodies were high. And because the GP don't treat your antibodies, the naturopath did. So it was at that point that I gave up gluten and, you know, just started to look a lot more into the possible triggers for the Hashimoto's, which is what I have. And, you know, I ended up doing, comprehensive digestive stool analysis and turned out I had a candida overgrowth and all sorts of gut things going on, leaky gut, which, as you know, is one of the major underlying causes for autoimmunity. So there was a lot of gut work that had to go on. And over the years, I've eventually managed to eliminate grains, not 100%, but grains for me give me joint pain around my hips. So I know that you know, that's you know, an autoimmune thing for me. And then, you know, my energy can go up and down, my mood can go up and down. So I do have to really look after it. I did eventually manage to convince my GP to give me a low dose of thyroxine because I just needed an extra boost. And that has helped. But I have managed over the last 2 years not to have to increase my dose because of all the other functional stuff that I've been doing. And you know, the knowledge that I have around functional medicine and nutritional therapy, naturopathy, and healing yourself holistically. But it is an ongoing journey. It's not, I don't think there's ever an end point. It's just an ongoing journey. I know that I am prone to high thyroid antibodies. And in order to keep them down and not, you know, send myself into a thyroid crazy person zone, I need to keep on top of that. And it's not always easy when you've got young children and you're running a business and all of the rest of it. You do have to be quite, disciplined with what you're doing.
Yeah, you do. Because it's one of those things, the more you look into autoimmunity, and for those listening, if you're a bit like, what do you mean by autoimmunity? It's on a really basic level, it's when the body will attack itself. And so an autoimmune condition. So there's Hashimoto's, which is when the body might attack your thyroid gland. And there's lots of other forms of autoimmunity. So say rheumatoid arthritis, that would be where your body attacks your joints, and there's lots of different forms of it. But often people talk about autoimmunity as like a broad spectrum of these different conditions where the body will kind of turn on itself. And one of the biggest researched things, and not the only factor, but the biggest thing that comes into play is often stress management around autoimmunity. And you probably find this, Lauren, but when you're a practitioner, you can, and you run a business and you've got other things going on, and then you're aware of how the impact of stress and how this impacts your immune system and your health. I always find it really sometimes funny, and because you're like, I know that getting stressed out about work or kids or whatever, it's not going to help. But that's often one of the hardest things, I think, to manage, is that kind of stress response and keeping that in a really balanced and healthy way. I think that is, and I often find with my clients as well, that's often the most challenging thing sometimes for people to implement. Often dietary yes. changes are awkward to begin with. So say, you know, thyroid issues, you're removing gluten because there's lots of research and evidence around that. That can be awkward for a month. But normally after a month of being gluten-free, most people are a bit like, okay, like I can get, like
I can do this. Yeah.
Yeah. They just get used to those habits. They get used to what to buy. They get used to what the cooking, like what they're making, all those kinds of things. But it is often that kind of lifestyle stress component that I know for me, I still is the thing that I find most challenging diet wise. Now I think there's just habits that where I don't think about it. It's not a huge effort for me to eat
yes.
in a way that makes me feel good. But the keeping my sort of mind and body not in kind of spiraled stress zone is probably the most challenging.
It's most challenging. Yeah. And I completely agree. I am the same. And I have been in various stages of adrenal fatigue as well. I've had my adrenal cortisol tested numerous times, and it has been both like in total flatline adrenal fatigue zone where I've just been like on the floor. But I've also been at the other end of the spectrum where I've been hyperadrenal, too much cortisol, fight or flight, that manic sort of, you know, I've done them all.
I've done it all.
And you know what? It's so ironic, but you know, I have a lot of other, I'm sure you do as well, I love a lot of other friends who are nutritionists, and often we are sicker than a lot of our own patients. which is just so ironic. So yeah, I've like got Hashimoto's, leaky gut, I've had adrenal fatigue, you name it. But having had these things, you put all the practices into place yourself, and then it makes it easier for you to teach it. But absolutely, you know, stress management is definitely one of the hardest things. And the one thing that I often have to talk about the most, because like you say, you know, you can put into place dietary changes quite quickly and you can change your habits. You know, have a green smoothie every morning, make sure you're eating protein and good healthy fats with all your meals and cutting out refined sugars. That is concrete and tangible. But asking people to change their lifestyle, so to take 10 minutes out of their day to meditate, or to what I found a lot with some of my clients, especially the type A personality ladies, who believe that the only way to sort of exercise or take care of themselves is to hammer themselves in the gym until they're practically passing out, but aren't losing any weight. So that's always a real sort of, you know, red flag for me, is when you've got, you know, these women who are, but I do all these exercise and I run and I, you know, blah, 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 but I can't get rid of my weight. And I have to, it's counterintuitive to tell them to stop exercising quite so intensively because they are hammering their adrenals. And as soon as they start to reduce that cortisol or even build a normal pattern of cortisol back again by doing things like yoga, breathing, meditation, reducing their stress levels, then the weight can begin to shift. But it feels so counterintuitive. They feel that the only way they can shift weight is by absolutely hammering themselves in the gym or getting a personal trainer or running or, you know, high intensity stuff.
So
that can be the hardest thing to convince people to do, is to actually stop doing stuff.
Yeah. Stop, take something off your plate, stop doing. And I used to be that person. And I'm naturally, it's very easy for me to fall into that. So like, I imagine, you know, 6 months after this baby's born, I will naturally, there'll be a part of my brain that's like, okay, let's do weight training and high intensity interval training, and let's do this. And partly because I do enjoy it, and you can get a bit addicted to that kind of endorphin rush from it. Yeah. But I know that my body, actually my adrenals, do not like it.
No.
And no. Actually your yogas, walking, bit of Pilates in there, you know, and maybe like just more gentle approaches to exercise.
Definitely.
And resting and not exercising 5-6 days a week is actually far more health giving to my body. But it is a big shift, I think, for women to make if they are in that kind of group of like, yes, I love my MetaFit classes, I do that 4 days a week, and then you'll hear people that if they're members of gyms, they'll do like 3 classes in a row on like a Saturday morning. I'm like, you're absolutely exhausted.
You do that. I'm just tired thinking about it. Yeah.
Like, I do body balance and then I do a spin class and then I do a yoga class or something, or like a stretch or an ab class or something.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
I'm gonna lie down.
I'm like, and then do you go back to bed? That's probably what I would do. but that has that. I think you're right. It does take took a while for me, not just to change my habits around that, but to actually figure out, okay, well, what's the belief that drives that behavior? And often it's either a fear of putting on weight,
yeah,
fear of like thinking it's the only way to say lose weight if it's in your body composition stuff, and actually figuring out that kind of root of it, I think, is a really, really important part. And another kind of topic you're super passionate about in terms of talking with your clients and community is this whole dieting, ditching the dieting malarkey aspect. Yep. Which I love here on the Good Goddess Show, and yes, spend a lot of time talking about. How did you get into talking about that with women, and why is it something you're so passionate about?
So last year, and you'll know about this, Kezia, I ran a number of sugar-free challenges, and I know you do a similar thing. And I think just because, you know, when you're marketing to people, especially women, if they see something that looks like it could be a diet or could be a way to lose weight, then they'll latch onto that. So they were hugely popular. I got a lot of women join my Shift the Sugar challenges, and I did numerous free 5-day challenges last year. And I was finding that it was just the types of people that were joining and the questions that they were asking led me to realize that there's just, you know, the mentality around dieting is so unbelievably huge, but it's also so broken, and that these women have got such a messed up relationship with food, and it's directly, you know, these diet clubs are directly responsible for that. And I feel really passionately about the mentality of either when you're on a diet, you are on a diet, and you're counting your calories, or you're counting your points, or you're obsessing about every mouthful, or you're tracking it on an app, or whatever it is, there's some sort of obsessive behavior around what you're eating. And I can't have this and I can't have that. And the minute you're told you're not allowed something, that's the only thing you want. And so there's so much deprivation around dieting that eventually there will come a point where you're like, I can't do it anymore. They're hungry because they're limiting their calories. They're grumpy because they're not allowed to eat all the things that they enjoy. And they're obsessed with every morsel. And they would come into my challenge and eventually join my membership with a really, really broken relationship with food. And it would take a lot of coaching to get them out of this. But how many calories are in this? And am I allowed to eat a nut? And can I, you know, am I going to put on weight if I eat full fat yogurt? And so there was a lot of teaching, a lot of coaching and handholding and nurturing that needed to go on to get these women out of this mentality that, you know, it's just about real food. But that seems to be so difficult for a lot of people to grasp, this concept of just eating real food, you know, as nature intended, and not having to count things or track things, and just heal this broken relationship And I think, you know, there was a lot, you know, there is a lot of emotional eating that goes on. There's so much emotion around food, and it comes from childhood, you know, where you're comforted with food. You know, when you hurt yourself, you might be given a sweet, or, you know, lots and lots of stressful life situations that may have led you to turn to food as a result of that, which we could probably talk about on a whole different show. But, you know, just trying to get to that, and trying to, you know, I guess encourage women to see food as something positive, something nourishing, and take them from a place where food is almost like a punishment, where they're kind of punishing themselves by either dieting or not dieting, or binging or overeating, or the diet starts on Monday, to actually a place where they feel calm around food and happy around food, and that it's something that nourishes them physically, obviously, because of all of the nutrients that you get from whole, real healthy food, but also nourishing them emotionally and removing the guilt from foods that are naughty, you know, or labeled in some way. That just remove the labels from food. If you want to eat a bar of chocolate, eat a bar of chocolate, enjoy it, and move on. And I do talk about this quite a lot in, you know, inside my membership. It's just have it. If that's what you want, just have it. But, you know, the rest of the time, 80% or 90% of the rest of the time, you've crowded out the processed foods and the refined sugars and the crap with wholesome, healthy food, which, you know, makes you feel good. And that in itself is motivating you to carry on eating well. But if you really, you know, we're all going to have days where you just only chocolate will do, have it, but just don't beat yourself up about it afterwards.
Yeah.
That is more damaging than the chocolate itself. I feel, get really good quality chocolate, you know, invest in a really good quality dark chocolate or something you really enjoy, eat less of it, and just enjoy it. Enjoy the endorphins that actually do get released when you have it, but just don't beat yourself up about it afterwards.
It is, because it's rarely the food choice, as in the chocolate or the crisps or the, I don't know, sausage roll, whatever your thing is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Whatever it is. It's rarely that actual single choice you make on a Monday afternoon or whenever it is. Mm-hmm. The drama that comes with it. I'm such a failure for eating.
Yes.
I can't believe I had that, whatever, meatball panini again. I'm so crap. I'm so fat. I'm always going to be fat. I can't believe I just did. Well, there's no point now. So I am just going to go to the vending machine at work.
Yes.
And then for dinner, I am just going to get a pizza, and I may as well finish off those three beers, and basically the rest of the week screwed. So why bother? Like, it's all that crap. I often say it with clients as the chasm of doom. I always say, have you like spiraled off into the chasm of doom? Because it's rarely the eating the Greg sausage roll. I mean, it's not the most nutrient dense food, but it's not going to kill you. Like eating that, it's like, but it's the whole process.
Everything that happens afterwards. Yes.
Yeah.
I see this a lot. It's the stories you're telling yourself. It's the things that you've told yourself. So it's not the food that you want. It's like, well, I'm a failure, so I might as well just eat this bag of Doritos, and I'm going to finish that off with a bag of Rebels Chaser. You know, it's
Rebels Chaser. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is how it works. Definitely how my brain would work. I joined Slimming's World when I was like 11, because I was quite overweight as a child, and my mum was, and I mean, it's mainly because we had a deep fryer when we were younger. Like, my mum just didn't quite know. She fed us the way her mum had fed her, kind of post wartime. So we had a deep fat fryer and Mars bars ice cream. So it's not like, surprise, you're overweight. We had no idea what to do. So we joined Slimming World. I remember Wednesdays was the night where me and mum would go and get weighed at the group, and then we'd go to like the fish and chip shop on the way home, because it was, and then we just eat loads of crap, because you'd be like, oh well, you've been weighed now, so let's just go and binge, basically.
Stop yourself for 48 hours beforehand. Yeah, and yes, it's ridiculous. And I find the whole concept of being weighed in public so unbelievably humiliating. And, you know, I don't know. I've never been to a Slimming World weigh-in. I've only watched Little Britain. And I can imagine it to be like that, with that awful woman with her clipboard, you know.
I mean, I don't think it's a very productive process. I mean, I've not, this was when I was, I think I joined when I was like 11 and was there till I was like 15. It's really young. So they did have, like, they do have like a kid version basically of what you do, but it was really long. And I'd probably only say in the last couple of years, and I'm 30 now, of that rewiring of my brain actually in relationship with food. And to give it some credit, I did learn lots of useful things because I literally had no idea about health. Like literally, I would eat tomato ketchup sandwiches as a snack after work with white bread, margarine and ketchup. Like that was a snack that I would have. So it was literally, we were pretty clueless. Yeah, or a wagon wheel that I'd put in the microwave. That was like, so I had no idea. I learned things like, you know, I remember them suggesting maybe snack on some yogurt and fruit when I come home from school. And I was like, oh, I mean, I like that. Okay. Weird. Sure. So there was some helpful things like vegetables are good.
Yeah.
Good. Yogurt is a good, like natural yogurt's a good snack. Like all these kind of, although actually at the time, I don't do great with dairy, but anyway, I didn't know that at the time. And so there were some good bits, but the weighing, the counting, losing weight, and the weight and a lot of these approaches are based on weight loss is king. And so my health actually deteriorated. I did lose weight, but my health deteriorated.
Yes.
It got worse and worse and worse as I got older and older and older, even though my weight became a bit more normal. But that didn't really matter because I was still losing weight. But I mean, I was stuck on the toilet all the time and depressed and goodness knows. So and just the obsession, I think you can end up having of good and bad days and the language even of like, oh yeah, I've been really good this week.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Like, yeah.
Like you didn't punch someone in the face.
Yeah.
And now when I think about it, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's just so, it does kind of, create this whole language around good food or bad food or on track or off
sins.
Track.
That's the thing. It's that they call certain foods sins. You know, that's how they track their points, you know, with sins. Yeah. Like food is sinful.
Yeah.
That's a terrible thing to, you know, to ingrain in someone's mind is that half an avocado on avocado is 9 sins and you're only allowed, I don't know, 24 sins a day or something. So why would you use up nearly half your sins on an avocado? So when I eventually tell people that they're allowed to eat an avocado, they fall off their chairs. They just can't, you know, fathom and are terrified to eat this food that might make them put on weight. I'm like, it's not really that that's been making you put on weight. It's the Doritos and the Revel's Chaser. You know, it's not the avocado. That's not what's making you fat.
Vodka and Diet Cokes. That because they're only like 2 sin or 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that.
You could save them up and have like 10 of them at a weekend and then you'd have your chips or whatever afterwards. Yeah, it is. It does. And I think you're right. It does take a process actually to help you change your habits around food. So you're not scared to eat an avocado or to put salad or whatever it is.
Yes.
And then also, but then it's also really easy then to get into the real food, nutrition, health world, and it's still carry that same obsession, but then it becomes around maybe your macronutrient content, or it maybe becomes around detoxing or not eating gluten or not eating grains or not eating meat or not eating whatever it is. So do you find that much with people that you work with?
I've actually found it in myself. And although I haven't necessarily been down the traditional dieters road and that I've never been a member of Slimming World, or, you know, I was definitely overweight after I had my first child and I needed to lose some weight, but that was just, you know, diet and exercise. But I have always kind of had in the back of my mind an idea that I am, you know, chubbier than other people. And that just came from a story of when I was a child. So I've had this thing in the back of my head that, you know, the driving force behind a lot of the stuff that I've been doing food wise has been about weight loss. And so even though it was packaged up in a healthy way, I have done a lot of detoxes and cleanses and, you know, like a 30-day, you know, paleo thing, which I did to heal my thyroid, but also I wanted to lose weight. So I do get this obsession with needing to lose weight. And even if you're not doing it in a Slimming World, Weight Watchers Daily Mail, Sunday Supplement, whatever kind of way, you know, there is still, it's what's behind it. So I did end up having, even though I was eating healthy food, it might have been a bit of an unhealthy relationship with the healthy food, because I felt like I was just using it as a way to lose weight. And you know, that can be difficult. And it was, I only realized that fairly recently, when I was like, hang on a minute, why am I doing this again? But I do need to be really careful with what I eat anyway, because I have a lot of food intolerances and leaky gut and Hashimoto's. So there is, you know, there is a lot there anyway, but I have to make that my driving force and not the need to lose 4 pounds, you know?
Yeah. Cause it's super easy to be like, oh, I've, you know, just read that eating a specific food will really support my thyroid, or not eating this food, like say gluten. But if you're, it is a different motivation to be like, oh, maybe if I give up gluten, I'll lose a stone effortlessly.
Yes.
That elusive stone I've been trying to do. Or to actually, this is going to help, you know, in the case of Hashimoto's, probably reduce my antibodies. And that is going to make my body a lot healthier and happier place. That is the very different motivations. And I think that does take some support. I think women do need support actually around changing that whole mindset and approach to food. Because it's easy, if you never actually shift your mindset around something, you can transition from a standard diet, Weight Watcher, whatever program, come into real food, nutrition, whatever, is find a dietary program that works for your body and whatever's going on there, but still keep the same mindset where you're, you know, when you're gluten-free, you're being good. And when you're not being gluten-free, you're being bad.
Which
it's still the same conversation.
Yes.
And still completely fruitless.
Yeah, exactly. I can't have gluten at all, regardless of whether it's good or naughty. I just can't have it, you know.
Yeah. It's not about the morality of gluten.
Yeah.
It's just about your cells and what they tell you.
Often. And it makes you quite sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's quite simple. And tell us a little bit about your secret kitchen club. So this is where, is that the place where you support women through this whole process? Tell us a bit about how you came up with that and what that is.
Yeah, exactly. So to be honest with you, it started off, I wanted to start a membership club, but it started off at, like, literally in a very sort of small infancy, just doing some meal plans. But as the club grew and more women joined from my sugar challenges, it sort of evolved into a sort of, you know, support system, I guess, to get women off this dieting mentality and into eating real food. And, you know, planning and prepping in advance, just being more organized, you know, having the tools at their disposal. So they've got the meal plans and lots of recipes to, you know, to make the food, but also the support from myself and also a community of other women who are in the same boat, really, to progress them to a place where they feel a lot more free around food. And there isn't this constant being on a diet, off a diet. So I'm very clear at the beginning that it's not a diet club. It is not a diet. We are moving away from dieting, and that we're going to help, you know, help with all of the mindset stuff around food. So I offer, you know, coaching sessions as well, group coaching. And I'm in there regularly doing live videos. I did one this morning. And everyone is just super, super supportive. And obviously there's the tools there as well in terms of the meal plans and the recipes and, instructional videos and all the things that you need to kind of start your journey to you know, being a lot healthier, with lots and lots of support in there as well.
Oh, fun. And where can people find out more about you and the club as well?
So on my website, thefairyfoodmother.com, everything is there. And if you go to thefairyfoodmother.com/club, then the details of the Secret Kitchen Club are there. And it will either be open for enrollment, or if not, there'll be a waiting list to sign up to find out when it's next open for enrollment.
Ron, I love that URL, The Fairy Food Mother. Such a cool, such a cool name.
My alter ego.
Oh, thank you so much, Lauren, for sharing your story and answering my nosy questions and just sharing some of your wisdom. I always love having other kind of nutritionist geeks on the podcast.
Total geek. Yeah, nutrition geek.
Because you just like, because you do. And I think you're right. What you said before, sometimes with the nutritionist, you know that actually more quote unquote sick than the most sick people you know. It is often because you end up doing this because you've been through that process. I think you've been through the right thing of being told, no, your blood tests are normal, everything's normal, you should be fine. And it's when ages being fobbed off, and then you're like, no, I know I can feel better. And then you start to feel better and you're like, holy crap, I can help other people feel better. I'm actually, all right, I'm going to do this.
This is amazing. Yes, exactly. No, I'm so very true. Passionate about it, as are you. And I don't think I would know how to do anything else. I think this is, you know, when you're called to something. Yeah.
And also, if you are on Instagram, then make sure you find the Fairy Food Mother. That's Lauren's Instagram account, which I follow. And I always like it when you do your Instagram stories or your posts about your tasty food. So if you're on Instagram, then check out on there. And you're on Facebook as well.
Yes, I am. Yes. My Facebook page is the Fairy Food Mum.
So if you search right on there, so if you have any questions about anything Lauren's talked about today or anything we've talked about, obviously you can head to my Instagram or Facebook and ask me there, but feel free to head over and follow Lauren and ask her any questions. If you're intrigued about the Secret Kitchen Club or anything like that, then get in touch. We love to hear from real people. It's always good. Otherwise, thank you for joining me for this week's podcast. If you haven't left a review yet, then make sure you head over to iTunes and leave a review just to tell me what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and to say thanks for having this kind of free weekly resource. Otherwise, get in touch. Feel free to leave any questions you have about the podcast or future podcasts. Otherwise, I'll see you next week for another Gut Goddess show.